Good morning, afternoon, or evening, wherever you are in the world, and welcome to the Bloody Awesome Movie Podcast. My name is Matt Hudson from What I Watch Tonight, and joining me from across the pond, as ever, he's ready for a monster of an episode. John Burke from BurkeReviews.com. How are you, sir?
I'm doing very well, sir. I'm glad to be in this planet. I had nothing. I was going to make a Kong joke, and Kong just sounds like too many inappropriate words, so I hesitated. How are you today, sir?
I am doing very well, JB. I'm off work this week. I'll get onto that more a little bit later on. So I've got time off work, so I'm able to recharge the batteries a bit before draining them again when I go straight back to work next week. But no, I'm good. I don't have a cup of tea tonight. I have a Coke Zero, and I went a little bit bougie and put some lemon in it. So, you know, it's one of my five a day right there. But no, I'm good. I'm doing very, very well. Excited in a way to talk about tonight's film. But before that, how are you? Are you keeping Florida safe and well?
I'm doing pretty good. I'm very tired. I had a screening in Tampa last night for a movie I'll mention later on.
How far away is that from you?
Normally, if traffic is small, it's about an hour.
Okay.
The thing that's happening, I took a weird way there, so it took about an hour and a half, and I had some weird traffic stuff happen. Got there, plenty of time to have dinner with Tuna and Borja, two other film critics, and we had very delicious fish tacos, despite a very slow waiter. But yeah, the fish tacos were quite good, and we went and saw the movie. What happened, though, where usually on my way home, it's an hour because it's usually like traffic's died down and whatever. But there's a bunch of construction happening. And the main way that is like the shortcut home, or the shortest route home. It's not so much a shortcut. It's just the way, right? It's the fastest way home. That road was closed. So I had to go like 20 minutes out of my way to get home last night, which was already, the movie was a fairly long movie. I don't know if you know how long that movie is, by the way. It's two hours and 11 minutes. It doesn't feel like it, but in reality, though, my time, it matters, because it's like the movie's at 7:30. I get out at 9:40, talk for a few minutes with what did you think, that kind of thing, hit the bathroom. And so it's like 10 o'clock by the time I'm driving home, but now it's an hour and a half. And then, I get home, I have to shower, settle down kind of thing before I actually fall asleep. So I didn't get to bed till after 12:30 and still got up and, do my normal routine. And I'm feeling it. I'm tired. I am very sleepy today. I've been fighting it all day. No amount of caffeine seems to be working. I think I'm at the point where I just need to actually sleep. But I got more things I got to do today. So it's like, when am I going to actually get a chance?
But if John Burke is anything, he's nothing but committed. He is here for you guys. I know what you mean, my friend. I've many long drives over the last few years, and the moment any kind of traffic or construction or whatever gets in the way, roadworks, the best laid plans of mice and men are thrown out of the window, and suddenly what should be a fun night eating fish tacos and watching a film becomes a clock watching exercise. And it's not exciting, it's not fun, but I hope that when you get to talk about the film you saw, that you can say at least that was enjoyable. But, long-time listeners know exactly where I'm going with this. Talk to me. Fish tacos. Tell me more. I love fish tacos.
Oh, it had fish on a tortilla and cabbage. And I think it had I forgot what type of aioli Sean said it was, but they were good. Real tasty. It was fried cod, which kind of, like fish taco, it's healthier if it's not fried, but I gotta be honest, the fried fish was delicious, which is why it paired nicely with the Guinness, though, because I'm like, hey, fish and chips goes with Guinness.
Yep.
Fish tacos and fries goes with Guinness too, right? Like, I mean, it has to. So
it's still fish and chips. It's still fish and chips.
It's just in it. Or reconstruct. It's in a tortilla. Yeah. Like, yeah. Instead of wrapping it in newspaper, they wrapped it in a tortilla. And I'm like, hey, I can actually eat this package. So
there we go.
Yeah.
Oh, man. That's what I needed to hear.
And I got it. The best part is normally that this restaurant, the tacos and fries are $15. Three tacos. It's a good amount of food. $15, right? Normal price. But Tuesdays at this restaurant are Taco Tuesdays, and it's half price. So $7 for the three tacos and the fries. Like, you can't beat that. it's a real good deal.
I just needed to hear fish taco again and what was in it, and it made me a happy man. But also, anything fried is always better. It's not good for you, but you can fry most things and you are onto a winner. So before I get any further down the food rabbit hole, let's take a diversion to what the Bloody Awesome Movie Podcast is all about. And that is talking about films, talking about movies. Each week, we take the biggest release of the week or the best streaming release, or sometimes the only release of the week, and we talk about it on a non-spoiler form and fashion on this show. And this week we are going back to Legendary's Monsterverse to cover Godzilla X Kong: The New Empire. Now, is it an X? Is it a times? Is it a multiple? I don't know. John, you learned of some groundbreaking news regarding the title this week, didn't you?
Yeah, well, I don't know if it's groundbreaking news, and it's not. I don't want to take any credit for this. Fair, but I don't want to take credit like I'm the one who like broke the story. There's Variety posted an interview with the publicist or something, and they were told that Godzilla X Kong: The New Empire should be properly said with a silent X, meaning you don't say the X. Godzilla Kong: The New Empire. Which is preposterous in a lot of ways. Why put the X there? You could just not have the X.
Put a slash and a dash.
Yeah, but then I guess maybe it'd be Godzilla divided by Kong. And it could be the new numerator. Yeah, it's not a great title regardless, and it's also... I think Big Picture pointed out that Big Picture is where I first heard this, and I did some research, found the article that discussed it, Big Picture podcast. And it's worthy of note that Sean Fantasy is the host of that, pointed out also that we got Ghostbusters, the Frozen Empire, and then a week later we got Godzilla Kong, the New Empire.
I got to stop you there. I mentioned that last week on the BAMP.
Oh, did you? Apologies.
Because we were right at the end. I was like, Godzilla, next week you're discussing this film. So, we've just done the Frozen Empire, so it's empires striking back everywhere.
It's a lot of empire. Apologies for missing that or forgetting that, whichever happened.
I appreciate it.
I feel bad now. But nevertheless, we are here to discuss these behemoths, these monsters who are apparently merging into one word. To be fair, there is another thing that we have to address, because... 3 movies ago, it was the King of Monsters, and if you've seen that film, the winner is Godzilla, right? He is thus the King of Monsters.
He's the big daddy, yeah.
But Kong, historically, is King Kong, which I'm guessing, I'm now thinking back, I don't know if they've ever referred to him as King Kong in this monster verse.
That's a great point.
Because it's Kong Skull Island, he's... Kong,
they might have mentioned he's the king, but I don't know if they've ever called him King Kong.
But so they're both of their status is not being adhered to. I feel like if either one of them are kings, they would be very upset that the title is not being put in front of their names anywhere anymore. No one says King Godzilla. I feel like, you know, we got to discuss this. We got to bring it up. Like, what's going on? Are they kings or not? Like, what's the dealio?
Are they paupers? Yeah. Are they statesmen? What the hell is going on, Warner Brothers? It's not like you guys to drop the ball, or Legendary, sorry, or whoever this is. What's going on with this? Why have you given this film such a silly title as well? I can't. When you told me, John, it was Godzilla, Godzilla beat Kong, as in leave a little space there, The New Empire. I was like, this is just silly. If the publicist has to come out and explain the pronunciation of the film's title, a film, no disrespect, like this, there is an issue there. Like you said, just don't put the X in. Does the X look cool for the marketing? I guess somebody thought it does. You know, you've had Godzilla versus Kong, so, you know, what do we do now? Godzilla X Kong, the New Empire, but you just put Godzilla and Kong. Just put an ampersand or something in there. We're all going to say Godzilla to X Kong anyway. And for everyone listening, apologies in advance. I will call it Godzilla X Kong, Godzilla times Kong, everything under the sun, probably except Godzilla Kong, because I can't get my head around that. Also, just looking at the poster, God, wow. Right, let's get into the films. We can give our thoughts on this. So, taking the information from Letterboxd. Who is in this? Who directs this? What's it all about? It's directed again, returning Adam Wingard. He's now done three of these films, I think. He's done...
At least two, for sure.
He did Godzilla vs. Kong, for sure, didn't he? And he done, and he's obviously done this one. That's correct. Godzilla, King of the Monsters with Michael Doherty. Godzilla was Gareth Edwards, and Skull Island was... I can't think of the guy's name now, but Kong Skull Island wasn't done by Adam Wingard. It was done by Jordan Vogt Roberts, is who did it. So, second film.
I vaguely remember him.
I had to Google it. Second film then for Adam Wingard in the MonsterVerse saga, and it stars Godzilla and Kong, but it also stars Rebecca Hall, Kaylee Hottle, Brian Tyree Henry, Dan Stevens, Alex Ferns, Farla Chen, Rachel House, Cassie Riley, and lots of other people of whom I'm looking at their names and I don't actually know who they are in the film. So your top five are your top build there in the film. And the synopsis, we don't spoil the film, but we're going to give you the synopsis from Letterboxd, which says, following their explosive showdown, Godzilla and Kong must reunite against a colossal undiscovered threat hidden within our world, challenging their very existence and our own. So we've said before that we've had synopsis, especially Ghostbusters Frozen Empire, which feel more like a manifesto than anything else, whereas this is short and sweet. Godzilla and Kong got to get back together. Something's out there. They've got to stop it or else they're gone and so is the world. Okay, I understand it. That's all you need. Surely a film with Godzilla and Kong teaming up this time is going to be the one to cool the fiery critics' hearts who have been so against these films. Well, John, I'm here to tell you now that on Rotten Tomatoes, the critic score currently sits at 54%. 54%! Not too bad. One in every two critic likes this film. Not a bad thing. Audience, however, 93%. That is to be expected. Metascore, 47. The IMDb user score, a little bit lower than RT. This is 6.7 out of 10. And Letterboxd is, probably unsurprisingly, currently 2.9 out of 5. It's available to watch now in theatres worldwide, and it will be coming to a streaming service near you soon. But whether or not we like the film, we'll get to that in a minute. A film like this, which is a blockbuster, it is meant to be seen on the big screen, should thus be seen out there on the big screen if you can. Currently it sits at $203 million worldwide, we'll call that. So it's making money. People are going out to watch Godzilla X Kong, the new empire. Had a budget of $135 million, so it's going to make that back. It's going to make money. Go and watch on the big screen if you can, do just because of the experience is required. Now, would we actually recommend that you watch the film in the first place? Let's get to that now. Very quickly, I'll run down my MonsterVerse thoughts. I'll throw it over to John, then I'll give my thoughts on this film. Godzilla 2014, quite liked it. I didn't mind it. Just had forgettable characters. Skull Island, Kong Skull Island, very much enjoyed that film. Godzilla King of the Monsters, I really didn't like that film, despite some of the best trailers I've seen in years. And Godzilla vs. Kong, neon drenched rubbish, wasn't a fan. John, your MonsterVerse experience, what is it?
Pretty much the same, except I liked Godzilla vs. Kong, but only like when I say I liked, it's like 3.5 stars, right? Like I enjoyed the thing that I think both that movie and this movie got is they seem to have taken a very big lesson from Matt Reeves's Planet of the Apes, because Kong is empathetic. Kong has a innate sense about him. There's a character, not just a titan there. You understand, especially I think in this movie, what he's wanting, what he's chasing for. It's communicated silently by Kong, and then the movie doesn't trust that the audience will pick up on that and has characters explain it in stupid ways over and over again. But I think the success there really brings me into the films, and I generally love Godzilla. Like if I was just going to pick like my one of my favorite iconic movie monsters, Godzilla is up there way higher than Kong. Kong is kind of a generic giant gorilla. You know, it's not that he's not cool, but he's just a gorilla, right? Like, where Godzilla is like really cool design and has the scales and it glows when he gets, you know, the atomic breath. Like, there's a lot more going on there to be a icon of cinema. Where Kong, obviously, there are iconic images of Kong, especially if we're talking the original King Kong from the 30s. But for me, like, the 2014 Godzilla is solid. I do like Kong Skull Island. I don't think the human characters outside of John C. Reilly are very compelling in Kong Skull Island, but I enjoyed that movie overall. A King of Monsters drove me crazy. I really didn't like that movie, and a lot of that is, again, the human element of it. I also think the storytelling has just gotten so convoluted in ways that don't feel necessary. Like, you can have an interesting story with this government agency called Monarch that's way more simple than what they're doing. And it's aggravating because you hear characters like having to go into monologues to try and make sense of things that nobody was even asking questions about. You know, like, there's giant monsters hitting each other. We will accept a lot of the reality of this world because we're accepting there's giant monsters hitting each other. You know, like, you don't have to justify it. Like, it we'll accept it because we're accepting these giant monsters here. Don't try to explain it away. Just let it be. And yeah, that one really irked me. I've only watched Godzilla vs. Kong the one time, and I wasn't mad at it. And that's kind of where I'm at with this movie too. The stuff that works for me works. And then there's a lot of stuff that just doesn't.
Yeah. I'm glad you got something out of it. I thought this film was garbage. I'm going to come out and say it up top. We know that we've got a lot of MonsterVerse fans who listen who aren't going to be pleased with that. And it's not, I can't even blame the human characters. And when people say, well, you come to see Godzilla versus Kong or Godzilla X Kong, like, yeah, I do. But I also went to see Godzilla Minus One, and I don't want to make the comparison too heavy because they are wildly different films. But yeah, the human characters in that were nothing short of incredibly compelling. They made the film, that they were the film, and Godzilla was the backdrop. Just happened to be a bloody entertaining backdrop. Here, that isn't the case. The humans in this film drove me crazy. You got Rebecca Hall's character, Dr. Eileen Andrews, is awful. Brian Tyree Henry is a living, breathing exposition machine. And what they give him to do, which is basically just chortle words out loud and explain what we can already see, is a shame because Brian Tyree Henry is a really good actor, and he is not given his dues here. Alex Ferns, he's in the film for when he's in the film and does his shtick. Dan Stevens, Dan Stevens is, I think, I'll let John speak for himself on this because John has his opinions. Dan Stevens is having a good time in this film, but my God, is he out of place in this film? I don't know what is going on with Dan Stevens' character and which characters he reminds me of from other films that he's kind of, excuse the pun, but aping. And the skill set that he's given is just, he can do this. Why? Because he can. And ordinarily, I don't mind that in films. Like 20, 30, 40 years ago, we'd watch films and people would do things and we just accept it. But the problem I have with films such as Godzilla X Kong and these other MonsterVerse films is they are so dead set on explaining everything. Everything is described. Everything is elaborated on, even to the point of mumbo jumbo jargon. So when something happens and a character comes in and can just do all this stuff, you know, where there is then a dichotomy that you're not. What's going on? I don't know what's to believe here in terms of how you're going to introduce this but not that, and how you're going to really elaborate on this to the point where actually the wonder and magic is gone and all these other things just happen just because. Do I come to these films for the acting, for the script? No, I don't, but I wouldn't mind seeing a good one. I come to these films to see two badass monsters just kicking people to the curb. Man, I come to see the Apus Giganticus and Godzilla himself, the Titanus Gojira. I come to see them just whip ass, take some names and have some fun watching it. I didn't even get that in this film because the action felt so weightless.
I agree with that.
I don't want to go too far into like the third act and stuff like that, but I wouldn't even say it gets to a point for me when there's no power, there's no emotion, there's no, and I mean literal weight. You can, when these titans are beating each other, I don't feel the weight of their punches. I don't feel the power. It just feels like hollow chaos, and I don't like that. Some people do, but I feel like these films have shown that they can do action quite well, but by now it's just devolved into just slugging at each other, and it just felt, it just didn't drag me in. So Kong, whilst he is empathetic in this film still, and Godzilla is still just a very, very angry dinosaur, he hates King Kong, he hates the guy, he hates everyone. He just wants to curl up in the Colosseum and have a sleep, and I love that for him. But these characters, you know, they have such great subtext in their lore and their history, and you know, all that's been stripped away horribly, I think, in these films, to where, you know, Godzilla's just a wrecking machine and Kong is Kong. I did like, however, I will say that now, because there is not an awful lot, I don't mean to be that guy, there wasn't an awful lot I liked about this film. I really wanted to like it, but the script and the words that people were saying annoyed me. The attempts at awe-inspiring visuals just didn't work for me. Similarly in Godzilla vs. Kong, where they just splash neon to make things look nice. I like that. And just some of the Hollow Earth stuff we saw, it didn't really work for me. I said to John afterwards, and without any irony, it gave me a headache. I just had a headache watching it as I went along. But I did like a lot of the mannerisms of the villain of this film, the Scar King. I quite enjoyed that angry dude. Like when he first meets... When we first go to his lair, you have a little fake out, which I thought was quite cool, and then we meet the Scar King, and he's kind of like dragging his body along, he's sneering like an angry Elvis, and he's got the spine of another animal as his whip. And I'm like, this guy's cool, I like him, and he takes no prisoners, he gets the job done. I like that. And his little pet Shimo, which is an ice breathing dinosaur, similar to Kong, who's an atomic breath dinosaur. This dude's got ice breath. I'm like, okay, he's down there, and they explain why. But I like the bad guys in this. I think they're cool, and I actually think they actually pose somewhat of a threat when they're on screen. But everything outside of that, I just couldn't get involved with. You know, you have Kaylee Hottle's character Gia, who can communicate with the titan, especially Kong. She has that was established in the other films, and apparently other titans now who come to Deus Ex Machina the day. It was just an overload for me, JB. It was a sensory overload. I had a headache watching it. I really did want to enjoy it, John. I wanted to be that guy who said it isn't a great film, but I had a great time. And I can't even say that. And I'm not even comparing it to the other Godzilla film, the Academy Award winning one from last year, because they are two different films, and I almost think it's wrong to do so. But that film did show me that you can have great monster films with great human characters. I don't come to see Godzilla X Kong the New Empire for the human characters. I do not care about what Dr. Andrews is doing, what Bernie Hayes is doing, what Trapper is doing. I do not care, because they add nothing to the film. And that's me. I know there's a lot of people out there who probably really enjoy those characters, but for me, they do not add anything to the film that I couldn't get from just seeing Titan slug it out if done properly. Godzilla King of the Monsters, that should have been the film. That should have been like the Avengers film for monsters. But it was a mess, and I don't think they're getting better. I think, like you said, JB, the storytelling or the narratives are getting, screenplays are getting progressively worse in this. They're going to make more because they're making money, and I'll be there when the next one comes out, and I'll be hoping to have a good time. I don't go to see these films for Oscar bait. I don't go for anything other than having a good time and watching animals fight, basically, or supercharged animals fight. I didn't really get an awful lot of that from this, JB. I liked Godzilla fighting. I don't know if it's meant to be funny, but there's a moment where Kong and Godzilla kind of meet up in the film, and I had a little giggle because Kong was kind of thinking, let's talk this out. Godzilla, no way. You cover my turf, you're going down. I thought that was quite fun. So I didn't hate the film, even though I did think it's garbage. But for most parts, I don't know. It just felt like nothing, JB. It felt hollow. It felt soulless. It felt like everything I didn't want these films to be. I want them to have a little bit of heart if there's going to be that there, whether it comes from the animals or the human characters having less to do, or just give us better characters who don't just exposit all over the place. It's, for me, it was a tonal mess, JB. The action just felt, had no weight to it, and it gave me a headache. Sadly, this one was not for me, but I hope you had a better time by the sound. Well, it sounds like you did.
Yeah, I mean, I had a better time. I'm baffled at what the studio is giving us. I don't know why they think we want characters to sci-fi babble for minutes at a time in extended sequences. And even to the point where they were cross-cutting action, like we would go back, what's Kong doing? And then back to the humans who are just like, oh, well, you see these symbols, they mean, and I'm like, first of all, you wouldn't know that. You just couldn't. Like, it's not possible that you could know any of the things you're spouting right now. But more, why do you think we need to know that? Like, just do something. Because that's the thing. Like, I was sitting here trying to think of an example, and I think Goldblum in Independence Day is a really good example, because he knows things that he shouldn't know. But he never, like, even when he explains stuff, and it's been a minute since I've seen Independence Day, so if he talks more than I'm remembering, apologies for making this claim, but I feel like Goldblum's style is to allude to something. Like he starts to say something, and then he'll just do something, and you put together that he figured it out. Like, you get it. Even if he's, again, he might be talking while he's doing it. He's Jeff Goldblum, so he's engaging, and so you probably don't notice that he's rambling on about whatever, but you got to have the characters like doing things, not just standing and spouting out words that are, again, there's no way they would have those words or they would know the information, especially Tyree Henry here. Like, I get that he's a podcaster, and I get there's some kind of new modern, the inclusion of podcasters as exposition dumps are getting a little ridiculous. Yes.
We didn't know what those symbols meant, John. We're not experts in past civilizations, and we're podcasters. And
the implication is that, like, oh, well, he is ahead of everybody because he's done all this research. But in the plot of this movie, the things he's talking about, no one has ever seen before. So it doesn't, like, just because you are an expert in the known stuff, you can't be an expert in the unknown stuff because no one knows it. That's the definition of the word. Like, so you, and he doesn't need to be. He doesn't need to explain it, because when things happen, we can visually understand that, oh, those two things hit, now this happens. We will see it, and we will get it in the moment. And while we, there, I'm sure that some people will be like, well, I don't understand why this happened. Cool. Do you understand now that the guy explained it? Because I don't understand how he explained it. Like, I don't understand how he could have possibly done that. And that internal logic really bugged me with some of the Godzilla stuff in the world, because Godzilla is still in our world, and Kong is under our world, in the world within a world. And Godzilla is fighting Titans to protect us. We are told that by this point in the lore of the Monarch universe, that Godzilla is fighting Titans to protect Earth. Yet, when he has apparently destroyed a nuclear power plant at one point in the movie and is absorbing all of the radiation, they send planes to get him. And I don't know what's going on at that point, other than it's standard iconic Godzilla imagery. But in the world that they've built, it wouldn't make sense that they would attack him. Even if he's attacking a nuclear power plant, they're literally just sending people to their death. Like, that's all they're doing. We know we can't kill him at this point. We also know that he's absorbing radiation, so probably not a good time to send your flyers, you know, your pilots, sorry, into attack. And while, again, while it's very good imagery and it's familiar imagery, the, you know, planes flying around the giant Titan, we've seen it since the original King Kong.
Yep.
It doesn't make sense in your story anymore. And that's stuff like that. It bugs me about this kind of thing. Again, I can have fun with the monsters, and I actually would have been, like you said, I would have had a better time if they had just been the monsters. And I don't even mean, like, the human characters, I think Godzilla Minus One proves they can have a place in the monster-type movies. But when you have them do nothing, and they're literally just there to try to explain things that no one was asking about in the first place, you're wasting their talents, you're wasting our time, and you're demolishing your own story, because it slows all the momentum down that you're building. And the proof is in this movie, because there are long stretches of this film that are essentially silent, where you totally know what's going on without anybody explaining it. So this movie gives you an example of what could be done, and then goes, but just in case, here's 10 minutes of humans spouting out nonsense. And that is what irritated me. Like, the parts where that wasn't happening, I was mostly enjoying, or at least not unhappy watching. Every time we cut to long exposition dumps, I was rolling my eyes. And obviously there's a lot of Deus Ex Machina in this type of movie, but it gets preposterous in this. I'm still, without getting into spoilers, just talking about Dan Stevens' character in the beginning of the movie. He's introduced to us as the monster dentist, because a plot point in this movie is Kong has an infected tooth. I don't know why that's in the movie. It doesn't really pay off, other than this monster dentist is not just a dentist. He's a monster doctor, or a monster veterinarian, which is preposterous, mind you. But it does set up a later Deus Ex Machina that is dumb and one of the worst stupid parts of the movie in terms of, like, plotting and how it plays off. Is it kind of cool as a visual? Yeah. But is it stupid? 100% stupid. It's so dumb. It doesn't make any sense again. And some people, the stakes, and to me, when you mention, like, the no gravity, the no weight, you lose something when you're in the world within a world where you don't really get a sense of scale of the Titans. Like, they feel small because there's nothing to compare it on. And of course, when they're on the topside planet, they're maybe a little too willy-nilly with destruction of property, right? Like, things get bowled over to a point where it's like, well, the world's over, right? Like, we don't have the humans left, because they just took out a major city here, and this
Snyder
is not the
and Michael
fight.
Bay look on in awe.
Yeah, it's levels of sheer ridiculousness that, again, I'm okay with it on a surface level, but when you're doing, like, a franchise, I mean, because, like, if you look at the old Godzilla movies, he destroyed Tokyo, like, how many times? Like, you know, like, a lot. But here, it's like, it's getting where it's like, nah. Cause, and partly it's because they move too rapidly. They move too much. It's like, yeah, but if in the old Godzilla movie, he kind of was lumbering and he would, like, fall down.
Running.
But the big thing is, in Minus One, there is a sequence where Godzilla takes out a city. It is devastating.
It's
you
horrifying.
Are sat there. It's scary, but you also feel the weight of human life being taken. Like, you feel the loss. That's not a thing here. It's just like buildings are destroyed, and you're just like, oh, did people die? Probably people died, right? Why am I not aware of any loss? Like, even like the people who run Monarch don't even seem fazed that people are being killed. Like, they're just like, oh no, Godzilla. Okay, what's for lunch? You know, it's like, it's that is an important part of these movies, because they're supposed to be fun, but they're also supposed to be scary, right? Like, these are titans fighting and destroying things. Like, realistically, if, like, an elephant showed up in your front yard, it would be terrifying, and he's just the size of your house. He's not 10 times the size of your house. Like, we should be horrified when the creatures arrive, and we're not. And it's kind of bad. I mean, even, like, it's missing the ultimate point. Again, I like to see them fight, but I want it to have some kind of meaning or purpose. And even with the villain here, the fact that there is a villain is kind of baffling in the context. Like, he has a bigger agenda than a lot of the other creatures have had, and yet also doesn't feel like he was a threat until he suddenly is. You know, like, he's not a threat, and he becomes a threat out of nowhere. Like, it's just like, oh, and by the way, here's the guy. You're like, oh, was that what was happening? Mm-hmm. Did they know that? Like, it's very, there's a lot of little things like that where it's just, if you tighten these things up, you have a really great film like Minus One. And I know we don't want to keep comparing it to that, but like, it's hard not to. They're so close in release.
They've shown you can do the things that we criticize these films for. And sorry, not to jump in, but I can already hear people saying, exactly, Matt, they're different films. You come to this film for a slobber knocker, you go to that film for the drama. There's no harm in maybe combining them both a little bit, I don't think.
Yeah, but even if, again, the slobber knocker part of it is you still want, like, when you watch movies that are like martial art movies, like if we go back to the 80s and check out like Bloodsport, there's stakes there. Is it cheesy and silly and melodramatic at times? Yeah, but you understand what Frank Duke is fighting for. I watch Bloodsport a lot. And, you know, like those movies still had some kind of weight to them. Like you understood what was going on. And this, a lot of times you don't. Like, again, I think Kong, you do. You get it. It's very, I literally, in a text with you, I gave a bulleted list of like the Kong story that doesn't require exposition, does not require dialogue. It's just within the actions of the giant ape. And I think that could work. I'd be satisfied if that was it. But then it gets clouded with all of this nonsense stuff that wrecks it, and it undercuts the suspense, and it undercuts the tension, and it undercuts the emotion behind it. There is good here, and that's what I think, again, is a little bit frustrating. I'm a big fan of wrestling. I've been talking about it a lot lately on the podcast because I've gotten back into it over the last 6 months.
I know what you're going to say, I think.
Well, but good wrestling matches, good feuds are built up over time. They have tension. You understand why these two guys want to beat the crap out of each other right now.
You have to care about it, don't you? You have to care about the feud and the people in it.
Right now, The Rock is back, and he is at a level he hasn't been in 20 years as far as like wrestling promos, and he's a heel, which, I mean, The Rock literally has like in his contract that he can't lose fights and stuff because he's so concerned about his image, and he is like, I feel like he's backpedaled tremendously to make wrestling good again. Mm-hmm. By being a heel. I mean, he's cursing and he's whipping people with belts. Like, he's being awful, and he's still The Rock, though. Like, he still has this expectation, and you can tell most of us who are watching know it's fake. Like, and again, I'm not saying that they're fake in terms of the stunts. The stunts they do is super dangerous. But it's scripted. Like, The Rock is playing a character on WWE that is contrary to his general Dwayne Johnson public persona. And the audience is booing him and then will be cheering him because they also know he's The Rock. Like, they're like cheering because you're seeing the master at work. You're seeing the guy who built part of, he was a major component of the Attitude Era. And his ability to be a heel, really, at that time, most of the time, he was a bad guy.
The Nation of Domination.
And still win the crowd over, dude. That's what we're seeing here. And that, I think, when you have literally, this movie steals some WWE moves. There's a suplex that Godzilla performs.
There is a suplex, which I could not believe I witnessed with my own eyes.
Yeah. So, like, if you're gonna, like, borrow from wrestling, borrow the storylines, even. Like, why are these two titans fighting? It's simple. It's usually territorial, right? Like, this is my ring, get out of it, and we're here to fight. That's the simplicity that it can be to be successful. And you have a first fight. One of them has to lose, right? And then there's a second fight. Like, it's the Rocky storyline. It's the, you know, it's the traditional wrestling storyline. We expect things to happen, and every once in a while there's a curveball, right? Like, you force the tag team that you don't expect. That would be here Godzilla and Kong versus, instead of the last movie where they were fighting each other, now they have to team up. It's here, it's in the foundation. They just don't execute it all the way. Like, they start and then they hesitate, or they feel like they have to, you know, psychobabble nonsense. And again, I am a film person who loves good talking scenes. Tarantino movies are full of good talking scenes where characters do explain things, but they feel sensible. You get why they're explaining what they're explaining, and it feels like those characters would be able to do that. That's not happening here. You just have characters reading some script that was written probably just to fill it because some guy was like, well, I don't get it. We'll just have that character explain it, and no one goes, why would that character know that? And the answer is they wouldn't.
And it's so blatant it's done wrong. As well. It's so yes. blatant when, and I, you know, I will single out Brian Tyree Henry's character, not the man himself, because again, big respect for him as an actor, as I do of all the actors in this film. But man, there's moments when he's in Hollow Earth and he is literally telling you what you can see on screen, and it made my ears bleed. I was getting very excited though at the idea of taking wrestling storylines for these, because you can just imagine right now,
yeah.
can't you, like a Hell in a Cell between Mothra and the Scar King, and by God, King Kong's a hit Godzilla with a famouser. Yes, I can see it right now. And I wish we'd got that.
I mean, yeah.
I mean, that's the problem with the film, John, is what you have just said. When you mentioned the suplex, when Godzilla took King Kong to Suplex City, that is the inherent issue with these films, is that there is not more of that. This film took itself, as do the others, so very seriously. And that's the problem I have. Similarly to, I always dump on this as well, but the recent Halloween films, more so Halloween Kills and Ends, that they lost track of everything that made Halloween great and took themselves so seriously. And Jamie Lee Curtis herself even came out and was saying that in the press, like, oh, this is a serious, she called it a prestige film, Halloween Kills, Jesus. And that film was at Cannes. This film took itself so seriously, and it didn't allow itself time for levity. It didn't allow itself for the C word, not that one, but the campiness of it all. Let's just have a bit more of, you know, yeah, Godzilla suplexing Kong. Have a bit more, have Godzilla body slamming Scar King for all I care, but just make it a little bit more fun. And it's hard to quantify fun, because a lot of people would have probably gone to watch this, maybe with their kids, who thought this was a lot of fun. But I think these films can be more lighthearted. I don't need the technical jargon. I don't need, like you've just been saying so well, you know, characters saying these things of which they probably don't know, they shouldn't know about. Have them there just to react to what's going on, because these films yeah. should be a lot more fun. They shouldn't be so heavy and bogged down by lore. Make monster movies great again. And I'm never going to use that slogan for many other things.
Oh,
make them fun
Jesus.
Again. Yeah, I know. You did say make wrestling great again as well, but they've got to just make it more fun. And that's the problem, John. I think that's my final point, is it wasn't fun enough. And I had a headache, but I didn't have fun with the film. And I really feel like I should do when you look at the combatants involved.
And I agree.
Anything else you want to add then to Godzilla Kong, the New Empire, before we move on?
I'm just going to... It's definitely not the worst thing I've seen this year, and it's still pretty fun. True. Overall, like, again, there's just parts that really like take you out of the fun, and it's those long exposition dumps.
That is fair enough, John. Are we going to say this is bloody awesome or bloody awful?
Oof, it's definitely leaning towards awful, unfortunately. But
and that's just our scoring metric, guys.
Yeah,
it's like RT. Is it thumbs up or down? There's no in between. Though we do have bloody decent sometimes, but okay, so yeah, I mean, it's not the most glowing review of the film from John and myself, but we will always say, unless we genuinely dislike the film, we will always say go out, support it. And I'm going to say that now, go out, support the film. It's a film that should be seen on the big screen. It's going to make its money back. We're going to get more films in this universe, so go check it out. Do you know what, take the kids. I think the kids would love it. In my screening there are a lot of families there, a lot of dads and mums there with their kids who seem to be having a good time. And like I mentioned, we've got Ghostbusters Frozen Empire. To me, that's what it's all about. If the kids are going to enjoy it, they're the ones who are going to carry on the legacy. More power. That's what I'm here for. So go check it out if you want to see an ape and a lizard fighting in a very serious manner. Let's move on then, JB, to something which is altogether a little bit less serious, and it's Concessions of a Cinephile, our segment where we switch to movie-motivated chat about anything we want, anything we'd speak about over a water cooler or a popcorn machine in the foyer of a cinema. You know, they always have those. But anything, you know, any headlines, trailers, lists, competitions, whatever you want to talk about, this is where we do it. We could not go without talking about our favourite movie monsters this week, or the best movie monsters. We're speaking about Godzilla, who is, for me, I think you kind of hit on it as well, Godzilla's top tier. You know, he's an A-tier movie monster across all of the films, The Good, The Bad and The Ugly. And there have been so many, and I was looking at the list that we've put together, and this is just but a snippet of the movie monsters out there, and they're great. But John, what defines a movie monster? Because people could say, well, Darth Vader's a monster. Now, what is a movie monster?
Well, and that's, I'm not sure I have a definition, but I think it's worth discussing, right? Like, it's, to me, it has to not be human. I think that's a key. It could have been human, but I think it can no longer be human, or at least not classified as human. And that still leaves a lot of, you know, open. For my sake, like, I don't think Michael Myers is a monster in the traditional movie monster sense, because he is, for all intents and purposes, he's a human, or at least so we're told multiple times. Depending, I guess, if you like count the middle movies or not, where there's something else going on. But
cult.
You could debate Jason, I think, to a degree, because if the definition is he's no longer human, it's definitely implied after the third one that he's been killed and resurrected by lightning. So at that point, is he like a zombie and zombies are monsters?
Freddy Krueger was unlocked by was resurrected by a dog weeing on him, on his remains.
There you go.
There is
definitely
that.
And he operates outside of the normal human world, right? Like he's operating in dreams, obviously, for Freddy. Yeah. So I think that would qualify as a monster there. Obviously there's a lot of flexibility, but for me, I tried to go with things that are like almost don't resemble humans. Almost. There's a couple that definitely still kind of do, but we actually did this topic on Top 5 Movies, a podcast I used to do way back when I first started podcasting. So Mike and Corey, we did our Top 5 Movie Monsters, and a couple of mine were already, like, I had already typed these out before. I was like, I'm pretty sure we did this, and I still have a lot of the notes where I would, like, keep track of, like, my list and their list and whatever. And, you know, I was looking, I was like, oh, I inherently went to this one both times. But then there was a couple where I'm like, yeah, they're really cool, but I also, like, I don't think about those monsters that often. And that's, this list is pretty straightforward, but I mean, it's because they're iconic for a reason, right? Like, and we're not like ranking these necessarily, we're just kind of throwing some stuff out there. You want me to start?
Yes, because you just eloquently described that. I mean, I can't add anything more to that. Obviously, a movie monster is first and foremost, you think of an actual a monster, like you say, something which is non-human. That is, you know, but the first thing I think of when I think movie monsters is something like Godzilla, or some of the ones that you've come up with there.
And
but it's amazing how many there are. You know, this is only, like I said, this is only but a small snippet of what we could have put. There are so many legendary movie monsters out there.
I do want to say Godzilla is not on this list because we just talked about him. I think Godzilla is like my favorite though. I've always really been drawn to the design, all of them. Like I went through, there's a, I forget if what website it is. There's a website though that has like each version of Godzilla. I had actually not seen what Shin Godzilla looks like until today, because I still haven't watched Shin Godzilla. His design's weird. I don't know if I like the design, at least not the image that I saw, compared to, like, I think Minus One might be my favorite Godzilla design at this point.
I think I'd go along with that. Shin Godzilla, I think, is so damn good. There was a moment early on in the film which really, really worried me, because I was like, is that what Godzilla looks like in this film? And when you see it, you'll know exactly what I mean, because it looks goofy. For me, it did anyway. But it is explained away very quickly as to why that isn't. And now I made peace of it very quickly. But man, he got that film. I really, really liked Shin Godzilla.
I do need to watch it. I have it.
Bad in that film. And I mean, he's a bad dude in that film.
I need to watch it for sure. But like, even as much as the movie's bad, the 98 Godzilla movie, I like that design at the time. I don't know if it holds up, but I like the MonsterVerse Godzilla design. I don't have any real issues. I didn't love him in this movie because I think he's looking a little bit more CG, but like the 2014 Godzilla look is really cool. But I think he's one of my favorites. But when I think movie monsters and I think of iconography, it is impossible not to go Xenomorph, right?
And boom.
Every iteration of the alien that we've seen, and we've seen some interesting designs. Yep. And we, of course, some people will specify like, oh, the queen is the one, but I like all of them. I mean, just the mouth coming out with another mouth is like so terrifying. it doesn't even like practically make sense. It's just horrifying to look at, and how it creates the tension where it like reaches out and almost gets Sigourney Weaver. I've always been afraid of the xenomorphs when I was a kid. I remember riding the MGM movie ride for the first time, and the aliens in the ceiling scared me so much when I was a kid. I just think the design is so cool, and what I think successful movie monsters, that's one of the first ones that pops in my brain every time.
That would 100% be my number one as well, or at least the first one outside of Godzilla, because we've mentioned him already. The xenomorph, like the classic xenomorph just from Alien, is immortal, is iconic. And that word gets thrown around daily, and I dislike it, but xenomorph is iconic. And even the variations that we've seen in Prometheus, in Covenant, and in things like Alien Resurrection, even though they are CG heavy, that film, you know, and Aliens 3 as well, worked too. All of the films, my friend, and hopefully the ones we're going to see in Alien Romulus as well. It's just an incredible, simplistic design for the most part, and the H.R. Giger-ness of it all just adds to that creepiness. But that is a horrifying monster. There is no empathy there. There is no remorse from the xenomorph. You're in its way, you're dead. And you just got to play. I couldn't, because I couldn't finish it. You got to play Alien Isolation, guys, to know that. You come across one of those bad boys, you're dead. You can't get, you can run, but you cannot hide. You are dead. And I couldn't get through that game because I was suffocated by fear. I got through it half an hour. I think most people, I know so many people who have said similar. I got about half an hour through, and I was just terrified by the atmosphere of it because of the monster in the game. And Alien and Aliens, my friend John, are perfect examples of where you can have a monster, a movie monster, who is incredibly well designed and scary as hell, or as effective as hell. But they're only as effective as they are because you give a damn about the humans. We care about Ripley so much in that first film, and all of them. We go to care about Hicks, Newt, and that becomes like the symbiotic joining there of the villain and the antagonist and protagonist, the monster and the humans. They work so well because we care about the humans. That is what I'm missing from more recent monster films, is that other than Minus One, is I don't care about the humans. Therefore, the impact of the monsters is subjugated because of it. As a brilliant starter there, the xenomorph is my top pick as well. But I'm going to give it to you because you picked it, JB. I'll throw one in. I'll throw this one in because it scared the living, or they scared the living daylights out of me as a kid. And I would love to see them come back again. It's Gremlins. I think the design of the Gremlins is incredible. And again, something very similar. It's simple. It's this horrible green, slimy, scaly monsters. But the way they're introduced, you know, you've got these little mogwai, don't feed them after midnight, don't do this, don't do that. And in that first film, they are really, really quite scary. I think it's Chris Wallace and Rick Baker did the puppetry and designing for Gremlins and Gremlins 2, but I think that they are instantly recognizable as well. You see them, you know, as Gremlins. You see a silhouette of a Gremlin and you know it is Gremlins. So what are they as like generally terrifying as the xenomorphs? Maybe not, but I still wouldn't want to come up against one because I would also throw it in the goddamn blender. But yeah, I'm going to stick the Gremlins in for my next choice as best movie monster.
Yeah, I think that's a really cool pick. As a kid, I definitely was terrified. And also the second one, while it gets criticized a lot for the silliness, I love all of the variations of the Gremlins that you get in the second movie. There's some really cool ideas. Similar, they do the same thing with the Xenomorphs, where like we get crossovers and crossbreeds and stuff like that. I thought it was a fun Joe Dante type addition. We didn't mention in the Xenomorphs, the crossover movies, the AVP films, but Predator is another design that I just think is so cool. I mean, his mask and his weaponry is so iconic again. And who can ever forget the first time the mask comes off, which the mask is so cool, but when the mask comes off and you see like the mandibles like open up and Schwarzenegger like react to it. And no matter how bad the Predator movies have been, the Predators are always cool, regardless of the movie that they are appearing in. And Prey is another really good example of, like, you know, if you do it right, if you make a character that we're invested in, suddenly we care significantly. So Predator is just, I had to have him on the list because he's awesome.
Yeah, Predator's incredible. Just the when we introduce to him through his own POV shots are so damn good. And we care about Dutch. We care about everybody. It then makes the monster better because of that. This one's more for fun, JB, because I wanted to get Star Wars in somewhere. But I love the Rancor from Return of the Jedi when Luke Skywalker goes. You could also stick Jabba the Hutt in there, to be honest. But Luke Skywalker goes to bargain for Han Solo's life, and he gets thrown in the Rancor pit below Jabba's palace. And you know, as a kid, you see this huge hulking monster with massive clawed hand, big teeth. We saw him eat the Gamorrean guard, the green pig, and the Twi'lek dancer earlier in the film. In this cavern surrounded by skulls and bones, you're like, oh god damn, how's Luke Skywalker, who has got the Force, how is he going to get out of this? And he does in the end. But I think the Rancor is a great use of practical effects. And back in 83 when they augmented it with some sort of rudimentary visual effects as well. But I think the Rancor is a great movie monster. Is it like top tier alongside Xenomorph, Predator, Godzilla? No, absolutely not. But it's one that I went to immediately when I thought of monsters in films that I dig. So yeah, the Rancor from Return of the Jedi and recently the Book of Boba Fett as well. But yeah, Rancor is going to go on there for me.
Yeah, that's, I mean, iconic for sure. I remember MegaCon is a convention that happens in Orlando, and they had a Rancor that was, I don't know if it was life-size to the scale of the actual one it's supposed to be, but like you were standing underneath a towering Rancor, and it was, knowing it's fake, it's still like, I don't know if I want to stand underneath that. Like, I'm going to just hang back a little bit. Because it could still fall, like, realistically, you know what I'm saying? Like, it's a giant thing. The last one that I have on the list is Brundlefly. Listeners may not know it by name because unlike Xenomorph and Predator, it doesn't have a series of sequels. But it's if you've seen Cronenberg's The Fly with Jeff Goldblum, he starts as a human, but he slowly turns into a mutant fly, and it's gross. It's horrifying. The transformation sequences are horrifying. And he is a true monster. The humanity as it kind of leaves him only heightens that monstrous element to the character. And man, I like, there's some images in that film that I will never be able to shake out of my brain, because Cronenberg, great at body horror, and that film is a exemplar of what the genre is. When we say body horror, I'm thinking of The Fly, because it is disturbing. Like, when his fingernails are falling off, or when he vomits on a dude's legs in order to eat it, like, it is horrifying. So I have to include him in movie monsters. He just freaks me out.
Brundlefly, that's an incredible choice as well, because he is, or that is, a movie monster in every sense of the word. And yeah, Cronenberg and body horror, whether it's David or Brandon, just go hand in hand, don't they? It's a beautiful melting pot. Hey, look, chuck in The Thing as well. We're talking about body horror and disgusting imagery. Like the Thing, just anything in The Thing is nightmare fuel. I've got a few more which I'll quickly chuck out. Again, for the banter, for the fun, Stay Puft. Is he a monster? Not really, but he was devised by Ray Stantz when he had to think of the someone to bring an end to the world, the Destructor. He thought of the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man. Iconic. End of. Two more. One of them's from a more, I say, more recent. It's nearly 20 years old now. But the Crawlers from The Descent, the Neil Marshall horror film. I think they are so well executed. I think so well imagined. You know, they can't see, but they can hear. And that's not an original trope, to say, but the way they eke out the horror from that, and they give you time with the ladies and who are spelunking in the film, you get to know them a bit more. which then makes whatever happens to them even tougher to watch, because these monsters are terrifying to look at. They're awful. Again, there's no empathy there. There's no, they're not going to stop and have a second thought about ripping you to shreds. So the crawlers. And then the final one are the Graboids from Tremors. Man, I think Tremors is great. It's, I think it, I am going to go out and say I think it's underappreciated. I don't know, underrated. It's definitely underappreciated. It is a great fun time. And the Graboids, who were designed by Amalgamated Dynamics, a US visual effects company, they are so cool. And again, similarly to like the crawlers, they move underground like mini dune worms. They move underground and are attracted by sound. So you got to get around without making a sound. A quiet place is looking at you as well. Things like that. But I just think they look great. I think what they do in the film is dastardly at times, and Kevin Bacon and all the other guys and girls in the film make you care about their fate, the characters' fates, and make the monsters stronger because of it. So yeah, Graboids, I think they're a underappreciated movie monster. One isn't spoken about maybe nearly enough, JB. Do you like Tremors? You like Tremors?
I watched Tremors for the first time, like officially, like really sat and watched it in the last couple of years. I don't remember. I don't think it was last year. I think it was maybe the year before. And I very much liked it. In fact, I just bought Tremors 3 and Tremors 4 at a thrift store this weekend. Because I found out the guy who has the guns in the first Tremors is in all of the movies.
He's in all of them, I can't think of his name.
So I was like, I couldn't resist getting 3 and 4 for, like, I think I paid like 50 cents for each. So I was like, yeah, I'm going to get these. I've heard that they're pretty solid B movies, partly because of him. Like, but yeah, definitely a fan of Tremors.
Tremors went down the rabbit hole of, you know, you've got Tremors and you've got Tremors 2, then you've got Tremors 3, Back to Perfection. Of course, that's the name of the town in the first film. Then Tremors 4, The Legend Begins. Tremors 5, Bloodlines. Tremors, A Cold Day in Hell. Tremors, Shrieker Island. They went down the colon route where they gave them all fancy titles. Fred Ward is the character who's in all of them. Earl Bassett, he's the dude that is in all of them. But I'm glad to hear that you dig it, my friend. I don't remember anything about those other films, so I'm hoping you can check out those thrift store bargains and let us know on an upcoming episode of the Bloody Awesome Movie Podcast. And just text me, because I'd like to know. I haven't seen him in so long. I don't own them.
Of course.
Movie
ones,
John. I don't
know how soon I'm going to get to them, but I do have them.
I was kind of hoping you'd watch them all tonight and then let me know, but I get it. Life gets in the way, I suppose. But movie monsters, look, we could throw in so many more movie monsters. T-Rex from Jurassic Park is another one, and I'm sure there, you could probably, maybe the term T-1000, there are so many out there in different forms and variations. We'd love to know what you guys think. What are your favorite movie monsters? Who do you think are the best movie monsters? Love to hear those choices. We'll give you our socials later on in the episode, but I think that's a pretty steady list, JB. Best movie monsters. Yeah. So let's move away from monsters in general, maybe, and let's move to our next segment, media consumption. And here we talk about the films, TV shows, video games, music, podcasts, which aren't ours, you know, anything we've been using to pass the time since our last recording. So John, what have you been checking out this week?
Well, I'm going to start with a new podcast that I was turned onto from a mutual critic and friend called Screen Draft, which is not a new podcast. It's been out for several years. I just somehow didn't know about it. And especially I'm shocked because Griffin has done a few episodes of it from the Blank Check podcast, my favorite podcast, and somehow still I missed. And I was told to start with the Pixar Super Draft. Apparently, this is one of the longest episodes of the podcast. It's over 6 hours long. But real quick, so depending on the episode, they do regular drafts and they do super drafts, and is a group of panelists are trying to build a list of a topic. So the four people are all drafting one list, but you're kind of like fighting for your spots, right? So like with the Pixar draft, they're doing the entire Pixar catalog at that point, which was 2020, so it was just before Soul came out. So it was 22 movies, and four people are drafting the Pixar, and they're trying to rank the movies basically by drafting. But like, so they rotate picks, and it's kind of fun. And there's like, there's a game element to it. And the two main hosts who aren't drafting on that particular episode, they are actually competing against each other over the course of a season by predicting outcomes of the draft. So there's all these like little game elements to it. And again, but there's a lot of movie appreciation and movie love conversation happening during the draft. I've made it through the Pixar Super Draft over the last day and a half, and it was worth it. It was a lot of fun, good episode. The ranking is wild because there's definitely some like they're pushing for I want this to be higher, so I'm gonna. They end up like mixing things up, and some like movies that you would not think would end up at the bottom of the list are at the bottom of the list, and it's pretty wild.
6 hours though, that's a long time.
It was a commitment. I luckily had a lot of driving yesterday, so I got most of it done just while I was. It made the drive not as unpleasant as it could have been because I was enjoying the podcast. But yeah, most of the episodes are not that long. That's the only one I've listened to so far. But I'm definitely I'm in on the super on the screen draft. I'm going to be going through a lot of the back episodes and nice. Checking them out. And a lot of them are meant to be short. Like cause some things they're drafting. There's only 7 movies. This was 22 movies they were drafting. A lot harder. And sometimes like the idea again, the regular draft, they've picked a number and the pool might be larger. Like if it's your best horror movies, like think of how big that pool is. Cool. When they're doing like a super draft, it's a much more narrow pool and they're ranking all of them. So it varies in those regards as far as the time. But it seems like a lot of fun. I really want to listen to more of them. I'm going to make that into my rotation, I think, especially like the back episodes, because there's a lot of them. I don't think it's weekly. It seems like it might be bi-weekly or even monthly that they do an episode. But again, some of them are rather long. So
nice.
Watching Raw, I mentioned wrestling. I'm excited because this coming weekend, I will hold off on discussing now that I say that, because I just remember what my bloody awesome is. I watched Raw this week. It was a good episode. It is an episode, but I don't think of them as episodes. It's fun being back into wrestling. I think when wrestling is doing everything right, when everything's firing on all cylinders, it's undeniably entertaining. You know, the physical competitions are enthralling. The smack talk is incredible. The storylines and the characters are interesting, and right now that's where it's at. So. It's been fun getting back into it. Again, I go through like waves of wrestling anyways. I've been on a down wave for like the last 10 years, so it's back into it right now, full in. So
I was just thinking, have you been playing WWE 2K24 still?
Yeah, the last 2 days I haven't been able to, but like that's been my game of choice when I have time, and it's one of those games you can just hop in and play a match even, so it's a little more accessible in that way than a lot of other games, because I don't have to play for a long time. I can just like play for 10 minutes and get that kick for the day.
Nice. I still need to play. I still need to get it.
So movie wise, I don't remember if I'd mentioned Matinee last week. I don't think I did.
No, you didn't.
Okay. So I caught Joe Dante's Matinee for the first time. And, I really liked that a whole lot. And, John Goodman's fantastic in it. And I didn't know that it was set in Key West, Florida. So that was a fun nice. Kind of, and also, have you ever seen it?
I haven't.
I didn't know that. Like, I knew it was like an old timey movie thing. I didn't know that it was John Goodman is a filmmaker in the vein of like The Tingler. He's made a sci-fi horror film that is going to have like interactive elements for the audience in the 50s. It's actually technically in the early 60s because it's in Key West, because it's happening at the same time as the Bay of Pigs, which I had no idea that was going to be an element of the story. And it's an interesting like cross section of how it's built. This idea of like horror movies, you know, because there's a lot of people who don't get why do we like horror? Like the world's horrible enough. Why do you want to be scared? But horror helps us kind of process things. So with Dante obviously saying that too. It's a interesting exploration. I really enjoyed the movie. I didn't love the Thomas Crown Affair, the McTiernan film. I don't dislike it. But also, I just couldn't get on its wavelength. I wasn't vibing the tone. Like, it was maybe too silly for me. I don't know. Also, like, rich white guy, like, you know, oh, I'm going to do what I want because I'm rich. It's like, well, that I don't like that. Doesn't sit well in 2024.
I was going to say, which version is this? The original, the Steve McQueen one or the...
No, Jude the McTiernan... no, it's not Jude Law. It's Pierce Brosnan, man. It's
Pierce Brosnan. That's it, of course.
Yeah. Which again, yeah, it's fine. I didn't like hate it. I just wasn't really into it. And I'm watching the McTiernan movies because of the podcast Blank Check. Mm-hmm. So I then immediately, Thomas Crown Affair and the 13th Warrior, both John McTiernan, both 1999. So I don't know what was happening that he got two of these movies out at the same time. but 13th Warrior kind of not good. I was real bored through parts of that movie. There's some interesting battle sequences, but he uses a lot of slow motion for like no real reason. Didn't love it. Caught though on Netflix, a movie I've been meaning to watch, written by Charlie Kaufman, or at least is credited to Charlie Kaufman, Orion in the Dark.
Oh, nice.
Animated film. Have you seen this? I can't remember.
No, I haven't, but I know it's been getting good word.
I liked it. I found it very heartfelt. It's, I guess, based on a kid's book. A lot of family stuff, a lot of things about like generational storytelling and the power of storytelling. And that always kind of clicks for me anyways. But I really enjoyed it. I liked the animation. Definitely worth checking out if you have Netflix. And I saw a movie I can't talk about yet. But Challengers, the new Luca Guadagnino.
Keep going.
Guadagnino. I'm not going to get it. Luca, it's the new Luca film. I can't say if I liked it or not, but I did see it. That's all I'll say.
Luca Guadagnino.
Mm. Yes, that.
I'll do it for you, my friend. Yeah, no, I'm looking forward to that film. It comes out in a few weeks' time, and we'll be covering it on the show, so I'm looking forward to your thoughts on it. Hopefully it was good, and like we said, hopefully it was worth the long trip to Tampa as well. But the usual mixed bag there from you, JB. It's never, whereas I can usually stick to a genre. I fancy watching comedy or horror. JB dips his toes into all sorts of water, and I love him for it. My consumption has been lesser this week as to why, I'll say shortly, but I've been watching the guys over on Double Toasted on YouTube, and their bad movie roast. They did Ghost Ship, I think it was, this week, which is a film which has one of the best intros in horror history, in terms of the kind of switcheroo-ness of it all, and then becomes one of the most bland films of its time, which is the early 2000s. Great intro to that film, though. And I've been listening to a few things here and there.
That film turned me off of fruit salad.
I can understand why.
Yep.
It turned me off of Ghost Ships as well. But, you know, great opening scene, and it could also turn you off of fruit salad if you are listening and eating one right now. I tell you something, I really do enjoy a good fruit salad. That's something which is a pleasure of mine. One of life's pleasures, the fruit salad. Maybe not for John.
But not from a can.
Not like from a can.
Canned fruit salad.
Yeah. No, but as a kid, I was like, oh man, give me that canned fruit. And there's nothing wrong with tinned fruit. And I use that in desserts. But as a kid, I was like, man, canned fruit, that's where it's at. It was because of the syrup, I think, and that sweet, sickly syrup that came with it. In terms of films, I've really only watched two. I've been in a position this week where I've kind of seen lots of different films. In terms of, like, I've seen snippets of them on TV where my kid will watch them while they'll just be on, and I'm really kind of focused on them. But I actually sat down and watched Ghostbusters 1984, the original, I've said before, she loved Ghostbusters, and even before having really ever seen them, just kind of loved the idea of them. And she watched Ghostbusters 2. She has weird obsession with Viggo, or like the idea of Viggo, which I'm slightly scared of. And really enjoyed Frozen Empire. She hadn't seen Afterlife yet, but I hadn't shown her Ghostbusters 84, not for any other reason, really. But that film is, like we mentioned last week, so I won't go on too much about it. You know, that film for me is accessible for all, but it certainly isn't one I'd call a kid's film. Just because of what, you know, there's some cursing and there's smoking and stuff like that in there that some parents don't want kids being around. But, you know, she knows right and wrong. So she watched that and really enjoyed it. Had a lot of fun with it. Loved seeing Stay Puft. Loved seeing the guys busting ghosts. And one of the proudest moments of my life, which doesn't relate to Ghostbusters 1, but the second one, which she watched again the other day on her iPad, was, you know, not TMI, but, you know, I was in the bathroom, you know, doing what you do in the toilet, and, you know, just having time out, and then suddenly I heard, you know, Daddy, the Scoleri brothers are there. And I was like, yep, I've made it. I never thought I'd ever hear my kid say the Scoleri brothers, the two ghosts in the courthouse in part two. But I sat there and thought, this gig's easy. I've nailed this. But yeah, so very pleased to actually knows about those legends of the game. And for some reason, and I mean this with the best intentions, because I think it's great, I put on Ghost in the Shell, the Mamoru Oshii 1995 original, not the ScarJo redo later on. I've seen it before, and I think it's a great film. I think Ghost in the Shell is such a damn good film, regardless of genre. It's an anime, but regardless of that, it's a damn good film, I think, anyway. The first time I saw it, I really, really enjoyed it. Plus, it's not actually that long. It's only about 80-something minutes, 85 minutes, maybe. It's under 90 minutes, which is great. But I have the Blu-ray of it. And it's one of the ones I've got left in my collection from when I'm packing things away. And I see it every day. It's just there staring at me. And I just thought, well, you know, kid's gone to bed, I'm going to watch Ghost in the Shell. Man, I really, really enjoy that film and the story, the thematically, what it's trying to say, all the everything about it, I think it's just so well done. And the ScarJo one is okay. I know a lot of people hated it who are more invested in the anime genre than me. I thought the Scarlett Johansson one was okay as a live-action reimagining of that story. I think it's fine, totally fine. But that original, I think, is so damn good. So, yeah, really pleased to have sat down and watched that one again. Have you seen Ghost in the Shell? You're a fan of that one?
I did see it. I watched it, I think, right before the live-action one was coming out. Something with older anime just never really clicks for me, and I don't know if I just need to revisit it now, because I also didn't love Akira like a lot of other people do. Like Akira and Ghost in the Shell, yeah. I was just like not clicking for me, and I don't know if it's maybe it's just that it's dated or if it's my sensibilities. I don't know. Like, there are parts about it that I like. Obviously, you know, there's a lot of stuff that The Matrix borrows from Ghost in the Shell that, you know, I see that as just maybe also because I was a Matrix like fanatic, that it's hard for me to like see the source material and not be like, well, I prefer The Matrix. But it's again, I don't think it's bad. It's just I did not like it didn't bowl me over where I was like my new favorite movie. It was kind of, which I feel like with movies like that, they have such pedigrees behind them. I kind of want that feeling. I want to watch it and be blown away. And so maybe it just can't live up to that expectation of being blown away. So but again, not in any way a criticism. It's just they didn't click for me the way I would have wanted them to.
No, I feel that, because when I watched Akira I've actually only ever seen it once. When I saw it for the first time, I expected more. You know, I expected to be blown away. And the further into the film, I didn't dislike the film, but I watched it as part of a 1-2 punch with Ghost in the Shell. And I much preferred Ghost in the Shell because, I don't know, it just felt like it stayed true more to its own story. By the time Akira got to the end and it became this kind of bulbous mass of whatever it was, yeah, the film, I was like, I don't really know what I was going. And this is just after one, I'm sure there was obviously some thematic reasoning for it. I just can't remember what it is. But by that time, I was kind of like, yeah, I'm not as vibing with this as much as I thought. The world looks great. You've got the legendary scene of the motorcycle skid, which has been... Yeah. You know, used, like Jordan Peele used it very recently. It's been used in so many films since, or series. I need to go back and rewatch it, but yeah, the first time I saw it, Leah, like you, it didn't fully click with me. But Ghost in the Shell, it worked for me the first time, and it worked for me the second time. But I do need to go back and watch more anime. That is I've said it for years, that's my kind of gap on my list is anime. I've been blasting through as many of the Studio Ghibli films as I can with pause though as well. I'm not watching five a week. I'll watch one every few weeks because I want to enjoy them. I don't want to just I don't want to just sit through and binge these films, which apparently should be, which I think, you know, they're more than films at times. You know, they're so vaulted that, you know, I want to be able to sit with them for a while. Something like Grave of the Fireflies, I mentioned before. You don't watch that film as part of a binge. You watch that film and cry for 6 weeks before you watch something else. It's a tough, tough watch, but it's a damn good film. So I'm getting there, and some of the more classic anime outside of Ghibli as well, I need to start watching to plug the gaps in my list. But, you know, all in all, not a bad week for the both of us in terms of our consumption. Now, every week we've been doing this show pretty much every week, pretty much for the last 6-7 years now. I forget. It's been a long time. It may be 7. I don't know. Somebody out there tell me. It's been a long time. We've been in a weekly, And that, you know, a lot of people could see that as a big commitment, and it is, but we love doing it. We love talking films. We enjoy each other's company. But we've got to stay bloody awesome to make sure that this doesn't become the pretty decent movie podcast. We need to stay bloody awesome. We've got to keep those levels up. John, how have you been staying bloody awesome this week?
Well, Mania, running wild. That is to say, I am getting really pumped for WrestleMania, which is this weekend. It, unfortunately for my daughter, it's WrestleMania Day 2 is also her birthday, her 20th birthday. But I just told her we're going to have a wrestling themed party and it will work out. So we grew up with basically when I was a kid watching wrestling, there were four pay-per-views. There was Survivor Series, SummerSlam, Royal Rumble, and then the granddaddy WrestleMania. And for a long time, we didn't have the money to get it, but I would go to like our local video store and I would rent the VHSs. So like, I remember watching like WrestleMania 3 years after it happened, but I had the VHS and I would, you know, watch it and love it. And then my mom's friends would start ordering pay-per-views and we would go to like their houses. And then at some point, they started doing like a pay-per-view every month and it became really hard to like financially do it. Cause it was like $30 to $50 depending on the event. But, and once I became like, you know, 20 something, our friends, we would like, everyone would chip in $10 and we would all come and watch like a Super Bowl party almost, but with that. And then just a few years ago, at the advent of all these streaming services, WWE started the WWE Network and it's $10 a month and it's like, you get the pay-per-view included. Now they're not called pay-per-view anymore. They're called PLEs, premium live events, yes, because you're not paying per view anymore. Yeah. Because, but you're not paying to view it. You are subscribing to a service, which now is even better because I have Peacock, which has the WWE Network. So I'm not even paying for the wrestling stuff. I'm paying for like the movies and the TV shows. And in reality, I'm not paying at all because it's included with my internet package because I have Comcast and Comcast owns Peacock. So I get to watch what I used to pay $50 to $60 for free now, essentially. And better is, I don't know when this started because it was in the phase where I wasn't watching wrestling much, but WrestleMania is 2 days now. It used to be one day.
Yeah, that was news traditionally to me about last year. I haven't seen it for years, but I didn't realize it was a two-dayer.
I think it's been a two-day thing for a couple of years, and I don't know for sure when it was. It was definitely in a area where I was not watching, but Saturday is day one. This year stands to be literally one of the biggest ones ever because on Saturday, The Rock and Roman Reigns are tag teaming against Cody Rhodes and Seth Rollins, and then the winner of that tag team determines the next night's stipulations for Reigns versus Rhodes, what that match will be, whether Cody will have a chance to win or not. And so Saturday night's huge, Sunday night's even bigger, especially for wrestling fans. And so I'm really pumped. And I wish I had friends who still like wrestling because I would try to make it a party, but I don't. So it's just going to be me watching it after we celebrate my daughter's birthday. But I am nice. I'm very much like planning on just like chilling in front of the TV and watching wrestling Saturday night and Sunday night. And I'm not sad about that. I'm kind of excited. I've been like, it's on my literal to-do list. It's like watch WrestleMania day one, watch WrestleMania day two. Like, so yeah. I'm very excited for it.
I dig it, man. Well, and why shouldn't it be like people have Super Bowl parties? What's all that about? You can have WrestleMania party. That's more like it, my friend. That's more fun. That's what a party should be about. Get together, get some donuts in, a few Guinnesses, and enjoy WrestleMania. I didn't realize it was a 2 day until last year either. I don't dislike the idea as long as it's financially viable because you hit the nail on the head.
Yeah,
there are so many PLEs now, or pay per views, whatever PLEs that. You know, why is WrestleMania so special? What makes that different from all these other ones? Well, make it a two-dayer now. Make it the granddaddy. Make it a weekend thing. I remember growing up, yeah, like you, we obviously had the four main ones. And then King of the Ring came out. I was like, wow, we got another one. And then they started bringing out other ones, other shows, or more themed shows they'd have as well. And it got bigger and bigger and bigger. And yeah, the good days, man. I remember watching as a kid when it was Hulk, Macho Man, Ultimate Warrior, Legion of Doom, Papa Shango, The Undertaker back when with Paul Bearer, Lex Luger, Mr. Perfect. I was a WWF guy rather than WCW. And then obviously when the ex-CEO of WWF made the announcement that they were going to go to the Attitude Era, it's going to get a little bit more risque, and man, everybody I know watched it back then when it was The Rock, Stone Cold, and everybody along with that. It was good times, man. And for people of our age and our generation, it was a big thing growing up. And yeah, man, I haven't been watching the events because I haven't got the subscription, but I've been enjoying playing the games when I can do so. That's my a contribution to the ongoing connection with wrestling in my life from when it was there, from when I was a kid as well. But no, that's cool. I hope you're able to have some kind of party there, my friend, and enjoy it. And I'm sure your daughter won't mind hijacking it for a wrestling party. Get everyone together. tell your wife that it's a Snoopy party, and just, you know, they're dressed up as wrestlers, or find a way around it, and you know she'll enjoy it as well, I'm sure. But my one is mine is simply half term, John. It's half the kids have broken up now for 2 weeks for Easter. Which, happy Easter to everybody out there who celebrates, by the way. Hope you all had a good time now that we know after last week what Easter actually represents. So it's half term, so I've been spending the week with my kid, making slime, going out for walks, just having a good time watching Ghostbusters, and just having a good time, having a week off work at the same time. Something I'll always enjoy, always advocate for. But yeah, that's pretty much it. I mean, I've said mostly this week and last week what we did, but when to watch Ghostbusters, have done that as well. This week, been making things and coming up with fun things to make for dinners, and test driving a new vehicle. I got a new car today. I had to get a new car. Test driving that together. That was fun.
Oh.
But the last one, exhaust fell off, and amongst other things, I was like, you know what? I got enough going on. You give me money for that one, scrap it, I'll put that towards that one, and it'll do me for now. So, but no, yeah, half term, just hanging out, having time, spending time with a kid, enjoying life, and waiting for New Horizons to hopefully open their doors soon. But having a good one, my friend, and not watching as many movies as I could be, but hey, I'm doing something I enjoy just as much more, well, much more, spending time with a kid. But I am going to go see hopefully a damn good film this week, which we're going to be talking about next week. I really, really hope it is good. The First Omen is our film for next week. John and myself both very much enjoyed Immaculate, a religious horror released a couple of weeks ago. The Omen, of course, the First Omen, of course, is very much going to be playing into that religious horror aspect as well. Hearing good things, I think The Omen, I'll stick to all that to next week, but looking forward to seeing that. I really hope it hits that landing. I hope it does. Hopefully it's better than Godzilla, Kong, The New Empire. At least I know that the first isn't silent, so it is called The First Omen. It's not some weird marketing gimmick. But that is next week's episode. This week's episode, however, is now done. It's in the bag. We are going to put a seal on it and deliver it to all of you out there in the world. Godzilla, Kong, The New Empire, we weren't the biggest fans of. John was more tolerant of it than I was. But what did you guys think? Were we too harsh on me? Too harsh on this? Did you love this film? Is the Monsterverse running out of steam? Do you want more of them? Let us know. Follow us all across social media. Find us on X at BAMP_podcast, BAMP_podcast. John, where are we on Instagram, Threads, and TikTok?
Bloody Awesome Movie Pod.
Yes, sir. Facebook, if you're on that, Bloody Awesome Movie Podcast. We post our reviews on the Tomato Meter. We are Rotten Tomatoes approved publication, outlet, and podcast. So any films that you like the sound of, have a look on the Tomato Meter. You may see our review and rating on there already. We'll certainly be adding one for The New Empire. And if you like what we're doing on this show, if you enjoy our movie conversations, and we really genuinely hope you do, we would love it. We would be so honored if you would care to leave us a 5-star rating and review on your podcast provider of choice. We've got a few coming in recently on Spotify. Whatever you're listening on, scroll up, scroll down. Very quick and easy to do. We genuinely would appreciate 5 stars because it gets more listeners in. It gets us up the listening algorithms and lists. And it's another avenue to hear from more of you guys each and every week. And with that, as always, guys, stay bloody awesome
and keep watching movies. Blood, 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 bloody, blood.
Blood, 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 bloody, blood, blood, bloody, blood, blood, bloody. Awesome!